BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. I trust it's going to be an informational program for you today to understand this whole matter of executive orders and how we got to this point. Newsweek has reported that President Biden signed more executive orders in his first 12 days than did President Trump and President Obama combined. Conservative Daily News indicates that by February 1st, he had signed an unprecedented 42 executive orders, and those numbers have risen. These, they report, are orders to expand socialized medicine, provide taxpayer funding for foreign abortions, destroy American energy jobs, rejoin international agreements and organizations, further the promotion of mischaracterized U.S. history, calling for transgender rights in school sports, altering immigration policy, and the list goes on and on. Well, now running up to an election in a town hall event with George Stephanopoulos and the ABC News, then-candidate Biden said that we're a democracy. He said we need to have a consensus and not using executive orders to advance items like dictators do. Here's exactly what he said in that town hall with George Stephanopoulos on ABC.
So there's not going to be any delay on the tax increases?
No, well, I got to get the votes. That's why, you know, the one thing that I have this strange notion, we are a democracy. Some of my Republican friends and some of my Democratic friends even occasionally say, well, if you can't get the votes by executive order, you're going to do something. Things you can't do by executive order unless you're a dictator. We're a democracy. We need consensus.
Well, folks, did you know there's been a rapid evolution of this use of executive orders, and it's playing out right before our very eyes? What was the original purpose of executive orders, and how did we ever get to this point? Well, joining us here today on Crosstalk, we've invited back William Federer. Bill is a nationally known speaker, historian, best-selling author, president of Amerisearch. He is the speaker on the American Minute broadcast, has numerous books. Many of you have them in your collection. America's Got in Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations, The Original 13, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to Present, and Who is the King in America? An overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Bill, thank you for joining us back again here on Crosstalk.
Jim, great to be with you.
Well, there has been a steady progression on this use of executive orders. Even casual onlookers would say, hey, we've gotten to a point where it seems like there's a breach of the separation of powers here. So, Bill, as you and I talked, you started talking about these executive orders, and I'd like you to share with our listeners here today, what is the history of executive orders? Is this how they were designed? What was the original intent on these, and how did we ever get to this point?
Well, it started with orders to staff. And so George Washington, John Adams, it would be things like lowering flags to half-staff when a previous leader died, or take a day off. It was just memos to the staff, and they were not written down. It was not until Abraham Lincoln came along that they began to write them down and number them. So from Lincoln until now, there have been 13,985 executive orders. And Joe Biden is now up to 52, a record number of executive orders in such a short time. It's interesting you played that clip of him promising not to use executive orders and then using them. Machiavelli lived 500 years ago in Italy. He wrote a book called The Prince, where he advocated the ends justifies the means. And this was the idea that if the leader thinks that his ends are good, then any means are approved to achieve that end. Lying, cheating, stealing, so forth. So Machiavelli said this. He said, one who deceives will always find those who allow themselves to be deceived. Machiavelli said, men are so simple and yield so readily to the desire of the moment that he who will trick will always find another who will suffer to be tricked. Another, he said, it's double pleasure to deceive the deceiver. He said, a prince never lacks legitimate reasons to break his promises. The promise given was a necessity of the past. The promise broken is a necessity of the present. So it's all okay to lie and give promises, but then once you achieve power, you can do whatever you want. Sort of like a parent that sees a toddler with a sharp knife, and you will promise that toddler anything to get him to put that sharp knife down. Once the knife is down, all bets are off. Forget all the candy and everything you promised the kid. They want America to give up their freedoms, give up their rights, give up their guns, and they'll promise you that they'll take care of you, they'll do this, that, and the other. But once they get in power, all bets are off. All promises are broken. If you were naive enough to believe their promise when they were running, you'll be naive enough to believe their excuse of why they didn't do what they promised. Anyway, executive orders. So we have all the way from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln, executive orders which were not numbered, but John Adams gives one. Thomas Jefferson gives four. James Madison gives one. James Monroe gives one. John Quincy Adams gives three. William Henry Harrison gives zero. It's very, very seldom used. And again, there are things like, you know, put crepe on your sword to honor a fallen general that died, like a blue ribbon on your sword. But Lincoln, we began to see a change with him during the Civil War. Well, let me back up just a little bit. They weren't called executive orders. They were just memos to the executive staff. But some of the things that can fall under that is this gradual usurping of power. One is the Louisiana Purchase. The Constitution says that the Senate shall approve all treaties. And here we sent some ambassadors to meet with Napoleon to say, can we rent an island in the mouth of the Mississippi down by New Orleans so we can anchor our ships? You know, can we buy it? And Napoleon counters by saying, look, I'll just sell you the entire Louisiana Purchase territory for $15 million. He thought the slave revolt in Haiti that France spent 10 years trying to stop but couldn't, Napoleon thought that slave revolt was going to go to all the Louisiana territory. And he said, we don't have enough military. Besides, he's trying to fight a war in Spain. So it was such a good deal that Jefferson says to his ambassadors, go for it. And it wasn't until afterwards that he asks the Senate to rubber stamp it. And some of the senators not only were upset at this because they thought there's no way we could defend this new vast territory, some of the senators, particularly in Massachusetts, threatened to secede from the Union. So the Civil War wasn't the first time there was a threat here in the Louisiana Purchase. Why? Because Massachusetts realized that this new land will come in as states, and Massachusetts' percentage of power in the federal government will be diminished by these new states coming in. So that was a president doing something that usurped a little power. But now Lincoln. Lincoln pushes through all kinds of things because of the emergency of the war. He issues the first federal currency. Prior to that, different states had currencies, different banks had currencies, but Lincoln had the greenback. Lincoln put in jail all the Maryland legislature. He put in jail the Maryland legislature. Why? Because he didn't want them to vote to secede. They couldn't vote if they were in jail.
Wow.
Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. That means that you're not supposed to be arrested and, you know, without due process. He did the draft. So you had a bunch of Irish immigrants that came into New York fresh from going through a famine over in Ireland. And lo and behold, they're immediately drafted. So there was actually battles that took place on the streets of New York between these Irish immigrants and the Union troops because they didn't want to get drafted, but they eventually did get drafted. So Lincoln suspended a lot of laws because of the emergency, and he pushes through the first income tax. So prior to Lincoln, there was
You're saying he established the income tax by executive order?
It was the executive orders were taking shape. They didn't number them. It wasn't until 1907 that they began to number them, mm-hmm. and they numbered them retroactively back to Lincoln.
Okay.
But it was a usurpation of power by Lincoln because of the quote-unquote emergency of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was attacked on. It was called the Revenue Act, and it raised $750 million to finance the Union. But after the war, it was repealed. Then Andrew Johnson pushes through 79. Ulysses S. Grant pushes through 217 executive orders. And most of those were he was a Republican, and the Democrats in the Deep South were pushing through Jim Crow laws and black codes and started the KKK. So Ulysses S. Grant started the Department of Justice to crack down on Democrat racism. Rutherford B. Hayes, Garfield had 6 executive orders. But the big one, well, it was Woodrow Wilson had 1,800. But the big one was Franklin Roosevelt. He had 3,721 executive orders.
Wow.
This was outrageous. He concentrated power so much, he got himself elected 4 times. He served 12 years as president. And some of these executive orders, one of them was he outlawed gold. It was Executive Order 6102. It forbade people to own gold coins. Could you imagine the federal government saying this? So what people would do is they'd put them in tin cans, coffee cans, and they'd hide them in their backyards, and they would do all this kind of... And then Franklin Roosevelt gave an executive order to put the Japanese in internment camps. And so he really pushed it. Now, there was a Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court rejected some of Franklin Roosevelt's executive orders. And his way of getting around that was to issue another executive order and claim authority under that one. So one was the National Labor Relations Act and these different things. So he usurped a lot of power. Because of that, afterwards, Congress and the states pushed through the 22nd Amendment, limiting a president to only 2 terms, because they realized that anybody that's in there that long is going to abuse power. So the tendency to abuse power is always claimed to be for something good. Lincoln, he pushed through the Emancipation Proclamation. What was that? It was a proclamation by a president. Previous proclamations were what? A day of Thanksgiving, day of fasting, you know, day of prayer. They were more or less ceremonial. Well, mm-hmm. Lincoln did a stretch, and he said the South is a war zone, and since he's commander-in-chief, he can claim that his proclamation is the force of law. Congress didn't buy it, so he had to take the slow route of pushing through the 13th Amendment.
We're going to take a break here. William Federer, our guest today, executive orders. How did we get to this point? Giving us a history here. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are whales related to any land animals?
Chris, evolutionists think they are. In fact, this is one of their strongest arguments these days, that whales evolved from land animals with legs. Some say that the ancestor looked like a cow or maybe a wolf or a hippopotamus. Well, I think they're all wrong. Recently, the head portion of a whale fossil was found in California. It didn't have the rear portion at all, but this didn't keep evolutionists from claiming that they had small rear legs. Chris, why do we believe them? Why do even evolutionists believe them when they make up stories like this? The Bible says that God created whales on day 5 of creation week. They've always been whales, and they still are whales. Even whales go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Bill Fitter is our guest today on Crosstalk. We're talking about executive orders and how we got to this point. Friends, I have a lengthy clip. I'm not going to air it right now of former President Obama prior to he was then candidate Obama that was taking to task George W. Bush for the use of executive orders by George W. Bush and how wrong that was. Well, and then later, as his presidency came about, you remember the fact that he says, I've got a pen and I've got a phone. Let's just be reminded of that.
We are not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. I've got a pen and I've got a phone. And I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward in helping to make sure our kids are getting the best education possible, making sure that our businesses are getting the kind of support and help they need to grow and advance, to make sure that people are getting the skills that they need to get those jobs that our businesses are creating.
Okay, so Bill is saying, you know, I'm not going to wait for legislative action here. I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and hence we have executive orders.
Right, and they always come with the promise that they want to use it for good.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, once it's concentrated, it stays concentrated, and it can be used later for bad. William Henry Harrison was the ninth president of the United States, and he gave the longest inaugural address, but he served the shortest amount of time because he died 30 days later of a pneumonia. But it's actually a very significant inaugural address. And he talks about distinguishing the false from the true and the spirit of liberty and the spirit of intolerance. But he says, the reign of an intolerant spirit of party amongst a free people seldom fails to result in a dangerous ascension to the executive power introduced and established amidst unusual professions of devotion to democracy. So here you have the executive, the president, giving these unusual professions. We want to preserve democracy. We want to preserve democracy, when actually they are destroying democracy.
Hmm.
And this is a very effective tactic. It's like, I want to help the American people. I want to get them what they need for their jobs. This and that. But in the process, I'm going to destroy the government.
Mm-hmm.
And George Washington warned in his farewell address, he said, whatever transient benefit, what transient means, you know, temporary or passing, whatever transient benefit can come from the usurpation of power is far outweighed by the permanent destruction that it does to our form of government.
Bill Fitter is with us here today and giving us the history of executive orders. And so would you say that the real turning point then was with Abraham Lincoln?
That was a major turning point, yes.
Okay.
A tremendous amount of power that went into the federal government. Number one, the Republicans were against slavery. But once they were in office, there was, for a decade or so, the South wasn't a significant player. And so you had what would be considered a whole lot of people wanting jobs and a whole lot of financial interests wanting to get insider deals. And this came to Ulysses S. Grant's secretary was doling out favors and so on and so forth. And Ulysses S. Grant was defending his secretary, saying, no, no, he would never do that. Then it finally came to light that he was doing it. And Ulysses S. Grant had to eat his words and says, okay, this guy wasn't correct. But it's this idea that you had Grant, who was a general, and he was used to giving orders and people carrying out the orders. He was not used to politics where you would have people lying to your face and pretending to be your friend while they're undermining you. And in a sense, that's what Trump suffered from. He's a businessman. He takes over a business. You don't fire everybody. If somebody's doing a good job, you keep them there and you give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, he didn't realize that you can't do that in politics. Because what happens is you have people that hate you, sort of like a, you know, illness that goes into remission. you know, measles, chickenpox rather, goes into remission and it comes back in your later years as shingles. So it's been in, hiding there the whole time. It's just waiting for a weakened body to manifest itself. Whereas when Biden got in recently, he immediately fired and suspended hundreds of military appointments that had been previously made. Just flat out, didn't go through which person and are they doing a good job or not. Just hundreds of them, boom, gone. And the media doesn't cover any of it. And so then they put all their people in, and then a Republican gets in and says, okay, I'm going to work with these people, not realizing that they're just going to spend 4 years trying to undermine. Lincoln was a turning point, yes.
You know, Bill, is there anything in the Constitution that even brings up the power or authority of an executive order? How did that concept develop? You talked about the raising and lowering of flag, just giving a memo to a staff. But is there anything that comes statutorily through the legislature that gives such authority to a president? Is there anything in the Constitution that talks about executive privilege or executive authority that the president has, like we've seen it exhibited?
Well, Article 2 is the article that deals with the president, and it's Section 1, Clause 1. It says, the executive power shall be vested in a president, and he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. So the president's job is to carry out the laws that were passed by the Congress and the Senate. And this gradually grew like yeast to not just carrying out the laws, but pushing the envelope to writing the laws and then flat out ignoring Congress and just making laws on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of these was the Congress approves the Affordable Care Act, and then the president, in enacting it, begins to fill in a bunch of blanks, and this is where the president's Secretary of Health, I think it was, and she was used to be a senator from Kansas, and she starts filling in the little blanks. Okay, we're going to carry this out, and little nuns have to pay for abortions. And when it was passed, there were these verbal promises that, oh, it'll never infringe on people's rights of conscience. And even the Cardinal Dolan from New York had a meeting with Obama, and he said, Obama promised me personally that this Affordable Care Act will never infringe on the rights of conscience. And then he says, but he lied. And all of a sudden, they're making these, you know, people violate their consciousness. They have to pay for abortions, and then the doctors that have a reservation to doing abortions, they have to either do them or lose their job, and they have to prescribe abortifacients, and then the edging into the euthanasia. So this was the president usurping authority, and that's the magnet, is the power, the pull for power to want to concentrate. It's the whole theme of the Lord of the Rings, right? Where Gandalf tells Frodo, always remember, Frodo, the ring is trying to get back to its master. It wants to be found. Understand, Frodo, that I would use this ring to do good, but through it, it would wield a power so terrible they can't even be imagined. And so you have a good person like Joseph concentrating all the power into the hands of the Pharaoh, and initially the Pharaoh did good. And he fed the children of Israel, gave them the best land to Goshen, gave them jobs taking care of his cattle. But then there was a new Pharaoh that did not know Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
He used all this concentrated power to oppress the children of Israel and even make them throw their boys in the Nile River. And so that's the dilemma. You have, you know, Jimmy Carter pushing through the Department of Education. Oh, we want all these kids to be better educated. And then over time, it's turned into them pushing the transgendered agenda,
right,
and all kinds of condom races and all these type of perverted things being taught to kids in classrooms. So,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so that's the story behind the Tower of Babel, that Nimrod concentrated power. He was defiant against God. Josephus in the Jewish commentary said Nimrod made everybody in town bake bricks and bring them. If not, he would kill them. And, you know, so it was oppressive over man. God comes down and confuses the languages and the people scatter. But it's almost like every generation since has tried to rebuild his Tower of Babel, wanting to concentrate it. And every now and then you'll have, you know, a good person wanting to concentrate it for good reasons, but they're not in office forever, and they end up handing it over to some son or grandson that uses it for oppressive purposes.
Bill Fitterer, our guest here today. Bill, we are hearing of presidential proclamations. We're hearing about presidential executive orders and presidential memorandum as well, executive memorandum. Is there a difference between executive memorandum and executive orders and executive proclamations?
It's fluid. In other words, if they get negative press by giving a executive order, they'll just call it an executive memo, but they'll be effectively carrying out the same thing. And then you and I will be questioning, well, should they do this or not? But then the item of usurping is you need people to follow along with your usurping. You do something you're not authorized to do, and if people let you get away with it, or worse yet, they carry it out, then that becomes the new guideline, the new borders, the new sort of like sandlot football. And the guy's out of bounds, and they say, no, the line's over here. And you're like, well, okay. And if you consent to that, then that's the new boundary from then on. And so the whole nature of usurping is they do something they're not authorized to do, and they have people that will not stop them, or worse yet, will carry it out. And so you had, when Trump was giving executive orders, the people that were supposed to be carrying it out would, quote-unquote, slow walk the carrying of it out. In other words, they would take their time and, oh, yeah, I'll get around to it. It's on my desk. And then they said when Biden gives his 52 executive orders, boom, the Department of Justice, all these departments immediately carry it out.
Yeah.
So you have a deep state that is allowing the usurpation to take place. And what's the answer is we, the people, calling them on it, putting pressure. And even though our voices are limited because of them censoring the internet, we still need to call those congressmen and senators and say, stop giving in to this usurpation of power. Don't be afraid to take heat from the media, have some backbone, stand up for our rights and freedoms. Yeah. Because if you don't, that'll be the new guideline from then on. And it's a snowball effect. So the more they get, the more they want.
And what we're seeing right now is there are a number of attorney generals from various states who are saying, listen, we're going to stand up against this. I mean, we're seeing some very egregious actions take place pertaining to our borders itself and putting our nation at risk. I mean, not even allowing for the deportation of those who are not only breaking the law coming in, but breaking the law within our country as well. And not allowing for deportations to take place. And we've got a number of attorney generals and sheriffs that are saying, hey, you know, we're gonna stand against these things. We're putting the nation at risk. And it takes the pushback from state attorney generals, from U.S. senators, from U.S. congressmen on these very actions. Bill Fitterer is with us here today. We're going to take a quick break and a little bit more comments, and then we're going to be back with more taking your phone calls here as well on Crosstalk here in just a short time. So be formulating your questions. We'll get to those here in a while when we open our lines. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Throughout history, most nations have been ruled by kings. Power which concentrates into the hands of one person, however, often rewards his friends and punishes his enemies. The King of England was the most powerful king the planet had seen. So when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible. A republic where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. So how do republics rise and fall? How do countries succumb to communist dictators? These and other issues are addressed in the book, Who is the King in America?, written by William Fitterer. You'll discover what makes America unique and the keys to preserving our freedoms. Who is the King in America? Is available for a donation of $18. A DVD of Bill's teaching on the same topic is also available for $18, or if you'd like them both, a donation of just $30. Call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and Bill Fitter is our guest here today. Do you remember when former President Obama talked about when he was as president, saying he was going to take action, and if you don't like it, sue me? Here's what he said.
We're just building roads and bridges like we've been doing for the last, 50, 100 years. But so far, House Republicans have refused to act on this idea. I haven't heard a good reason why they haven't acted. It's not like they've been busy with other stuff. No, seriously. I mean, they're not doing anything. Why don't they do this? And they criticize me for this. Boehner sued me for this. And I told him I'd rather do things with you, pass some laws. Make sure the Highway Trust Fund is funded so we don't lay off hundreds of thousands of workers. It's not that hard. Middle-class families can't wait for Republicans in Congress to do stuff. So sue me. I, as long as they're doing nothing, I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something.
Okay, Bill, he was saying, you know, the legislators aren't acting, so therefore he is, so sue me.
Right, so he's using a number of tactics there. One is called straw man. So he's saying an argument that they really don't, that's not a clear representation of their argument, but he's lifting that up as a straw man, then he's knocking it down. And so he's saying, they're saying this. If you get into the details of it, no, they were wanting to stop him from funneling money to all kinds of wasteful programs and, spending money overseas and things like that. There was the one where his budget was so big and they stopped the budget bill, and he on his own decides he's going to shut down all the national parks and shut down the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. It takes no money to run the Washington Memorial. I mean, it's just there. It's stone, but he had him put up barricades and barriers around it because he wanted to punish the country.
Bill, he put up barriers.
The oil spill.
He put up barriers on the roadway where people can pull off and just view Mount Rushmore. I mean, that's how bizarre this thing went. I mean, shutting down the country for that, but actually went to the effort of having barricades put on the pull off so people could not see Mount Rushmore from the road.
Yeah, so the idea was to make people feel the pain and then channel their frustrations at the Republican Congress rather than them saying, no, it's his executive decision that is shutting off the view of Mount Rushmore and not allowing people to go to World War II Memorial and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that he did is called projection, and that's you accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of, that you say that, they're the bad one, but actually, little kids do this. I didn't start the fight. You did it. Another thing that he was using there is called seizing the moral high ground, is saying, or this is called virtue signaling, where it's saying, I care more about people than you do. And casinos do this. If they move in, people will want to say, well, the crime will go up. But if the casino gives a little money to schools, they can seize the moral high ground, and they can say, we care more about children than you do, so if you don't vote for casinos, you must hate the children. These are all tactics that have been polished. They couldn't get away with them unless the media let them, and the media is letting them. But I have seen some interesting ones. So the governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, S-T-I-T-T, he just issued an executive order to make a recent Biden executive order nullified. So here you have some pushback, and kudos to him. Another is you have state legislatures in South Dakota and North Dakota invalidating Obama's executive orders. There's pushback. And at the very least, they should say, look, you're not a dictator. They did this to Lincoln. Here, Lincoln wanted to do something so good as to end slavery. But they said, you're not a king, You have to go through the legislative process and pass the 13th Amendment, which Lincoln did, and he signed it. He put his signature. Didn't have to, but he did. He put his signature on it. But no matter how good it is that you want to do, you have to go through the process. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're destroying the form of government. So here we have all female athletics are destroyed by one Biden executive order.
Yeah.
Saying that men can run and participate in female sports. Just about everybody says, look, these guys don't have to take hormones. They don't have to have operations. All they got to do is feel like a woman on the day of the race, and they can go in there and win all the prizes. And these girls who've been working for, you know, years and years, their dream is stolen from them. And it's not theoretical. It has happened in weightlifting and all these different sports. So they need to be called on it,
yeah,
that executive orders are only supposed to help carry out the laws that were properly passed through the normal legislative process.
And there's been abuse by...
Clinton started a war with an executive order, the Kosovo War.
Hmm. Bill, there's been abuse by both Republican and Democratic presidents in this?
Yes, and that's the problem. You get the Republicans in there and say, hey, you should call them on this. And they're like, well, we don't want to, you know, do too much because we may want to use this later. No, we need to draw the line and say that it has to be proper. It has to go through. That's one of the reasons that people respect Trump so much. Instead of him ruling through executive orders, he spent the time of working through Congress, and he was stymied by Paul Ryan forever and others. But nevertheless, Trump had 220 executive orders. That is the least all the way back to George H.W. Bush, who had 166, and prior to that, Gerald Ford.
Hmm.
So you had the least in the most recent history was John F. Kennedy, 214, Gerald Ford, 169, H.W. Bush, 166, and Donald Trump, 220. And you had Barack Obama with 276, Clinton with 364, and so forth. So Trump did show restraint, and that is one of the reasons that he's not in office right now. He could have used executive power and taken all those voting machines and forcibly had them, researched and so forth, but he didn't. And so as a result, he's not in. But this is a serious thing that it comes down to, at the very least, citizens putting pressure on their state legislatures and their governors to say, we don't want you to honor unconstitutional grabs of power by the president, and you need to start having these things, insist that these things go through the proper legislative channels before they're put into law.
Our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. William J. Federer, our guest today, 800-733-9829. Maybe you've got a question here about this topic of executive orders, their use, and just with the stroke of a pen, we put many thousands of people out of work. You know, with the Keystone XL, with the stroke of the pen, we destroy girls' sports in our schools. And where is this going to end? And this is the importance for, as Bill said, pushback on these areas. Again, our number 800-733-9829 here today in Crosstalk. And ladies and gentlemen, there is such a thing called separation of powers. And that's why it's important, whether Republican or Democrat, that this is recognized. The aspect of separation of powers. There is a legislative branch. There is an executive branch. There is a judicial branch. And for that respect, what would you call it? Tricameral government here, Bill?
Right. Well, it bicameral, House and Senate, and then you have the president, and then you have the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court should be deciding these various executive orders are unconstitutional and throwing them out.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump had one where he didn't want to let terrorists into the country. And so he picked the seven most terrorist-associated countries. It was a seven Muslim-majority countries, and put an executive order to protect the nation from them. A federal court tied it up. Finally, the case was upheld, and his executive order was proper.
Yeah.
But it was shortly before his term ended.
Yep.
And but nevertheless, he honored and waited for years till it worked through the yeah. process.
Let's go to Spring Valley, Minnesota. Gerald, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering about the executive orders. I was under the understanding that the executives were not allowed to make laws. When did it happen that they were given that power to do that?
Thank you for that. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, they were never officially given that power. It's usurpation. It's them doing it. And the Congress, which is supposed to be impeaching the presidents when they usurp power, if the party, like right now, if the same political party controls Congress as controls the White House, they don't want to put their own person under impeachment. And so they let them get away with it. Unfortunately, this happens from time to time with Republicans, but in recent history, it's been mostly Democrats. Again, you had Bill Clinton on an executive order, got us involved with the Bosnian War right during the Monica Lewinsky trials. That's why some think that he did that to try to distract.
Gerald, thank you so much for the call today. Let's go to Dee in Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air, Dee.
Yes, I heard recently, I think this is what I understood it to mean, is that the Biden administration was sending out letters and had already sent out letters to the different states' attorneys generals that they resign. And I'm wondering how in the world can they, I would think that they were elected in their own state.
Yeah, this is not state attorney generals, this is U.S. attorneys, federal attorneys.
So they're all in, every state has one or some?
There's a number of U.S. attorneys across the nation, but this is not your state attorney general that are elected by the people. So these are U.S. attorneys that, yes, recently the order's been given, I understand, by February, thank you for the call, Bill, by February 28th for these U.S. attorneys to submit their resignation to the Biden administration.
Yeah, that was just last week, February 9th. Biden administration asks Trump-appointed U.S. attorneys to resign, but not Durham, right? So here's Durham that was going to be doing this expose on all the corruption, and lo and behold, Biden does not ask him to resign. Shows what side he was on.
We're going to take a quick break. Thank you for the call. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Bill Federer, our guest today. Executive orders, our topic, how did we get to this point? Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. I'm pleased to announce that the docu-movie Absolute Proof is available for you to watch free of charge at wvwtv.com/proof. This is not a political documentary. This is an educational documentary to preserve our republic for all people. This shows what happened with the cyber attack on our election cycle by enemies, foreign and domestic. It was produced as executive producers by myself, Brandon House, Mike Lindell, and Mary Fanning. We filmed it and post-edited this in 6 days. It was a Herculean achievement for the American people and for our religious liberty, economic freedom, and God-given rights. I hope you'll spread it far and wide and watch this educational public service documentary. WVWTV.com/proof. That's WVWTV.com/proof.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Just want to remind you folks, some of the very issues we're talking about today as far as the whole issue of the United States and power and authority, it's we the people. And his book and DVD that we mentioned last week here in the program, we still have that available, Who is the King in America? And Who are the Counselors to the King? It's an overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. That book, matter of fact, we just got another shipment in today, and we'll be turning those around here quickly. The book is available for donation of $18. The DVD, the teaching of that, available for donation of $18. If you want the book and the DVD combo, it's available for donation of $30. It's available at vcyamerica.org, or you may call our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829. Let's go to Jim calling in from Wisconsin. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, Bill, what a treasure trove of history that you share with the rest of us. Appreciate it so much. Thank you so much.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I just want to say, first of all, as children of the Lord, we need to cover everything with prayer, but then put feet and action to this all this information. So I'm encouraging people to get off their couches, whatever, grab their phones, and start calling our congressmen and saying, you need to listen to this program, you need to be informed, you need to know what's going on, and use this opportunity while we still have a voice.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. And Bill, he's referring to the pushback that you're talking about there, coming from the citizens, the people who are king. It's also coming from states who are saying we object to this. It's coming from state attorney generals as well.
You know, one was Harry S. Truman wanted to seize control over all steel companies in America just by an executive order. They say, nope, we got to, the Korean War, we need to make some machinery and so forth. I'm just going to take control. And there was pushback. And the pushback said, no, we can't let you just simply, no matter how good it is or what you want to do, you can't rule as a dictator.
Yeah. Well, what do we have? Don't we have Mr. President Biden here giving a proclamation adjusting imports on aluminum? Interesting indeed. We're going next to Karen in Duluth, Minnesota. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mr. Federer, I certainly hope you've been consulting with President Trump. You could give me the answer after I ask you this, but I'm wondering, where can I find American history textbooks that tell the truth as you relate it to us? Are there any?
Well, I've written about 20 of them, and you can get them all through VCY America. One is, I can mention a couple titles, Who is the King in America? The Overview of 6,000 Years of History and Why America is Unique. Another is called Change to Chains, and I go through this trend for power to want to concentrate, list all the different kingdoms century by century, and I go with another book called Rise of the Tyrant, and it goes through how democracies rise and how they fall, how republics rise and fall, and they rise when the people have morals and virtue and they're hardworking, and they fall when the people gives into passions and lusts, and it turns into chaos, and they want someone to restore order, and some governor comes along and says, I can restore order, I just need some emergency powers. And then before you know it, you're being ruled by executive order again.
And then, Bill, I believe your first book, America's God and Country Encyclopedia Quotations, I mean, just all the quotes from founding fathers and constitutions and everything pointing to the godly heritage of our nation. And I know we've got that one available as well. But, Bill, also, you've got a website. You've got so much material. That's AmericanMinute.com, correct?
Yes. Two other books, Miracles in American History, Volume 1, Volume 2, goes through French and Indian War, Revolution, War of 1812, Civil War, Barbary Pirate War, where there's a crisis, the people pray and have courage, and things turn around. So very inspiring.
Thank you, Karen, for the call. Next is Fred in Milwaukee. You're on the air.
Yes, it's... there an official legal reason why Trump did not write executive orders to overturn the election results and take the presidency for the second term? Was he held hostage, his family, something in that order?
He just didn't have people surrounding him to carry it out. For example, the Peter Navarro, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right.
I believe so.
But he said there were 40 executive orders toward the end of Trump's term, but Bill Barr and the Department of Justice drug their feet. They call it slow walking, and never got them implemented. And then, boom, as soon as Obama's in, he gives an executive order, all the Department of Justice and everybody carries it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's office politics, but it's the ultimate office politics because it's taking place in our Capitol.
But, Bill, and I think to Fred's question, he could not have written an executive order to stay in office himself.
That would have been a stretch. That would have been mm-hmm. him pushing the envelope on it, and he didn't want to do that.
Let's go to Leroy in Atlanta. You're on the air, Leroy.
Yes, so I had a question and a comment. My question is this. Are the U.S. attorneys that are to be fired, would they be the ones that would have prosecuted Hunter Biden? Also, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, they decided that abortion was okay and a man can marry a man. But they couldn't bring themselves to even hear cases about voter fraud?
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It's remarkable indeed.
Yeah. You're observing the hypocrisy accurately. And, yes, they have been very selective in which yeah. ones that they're doing. If there's something, for example, when the Obamacare went through, and they had a provision that all the congressmen and senators had to participate in it. Guess what? In one day, they threw that out and say, we don't have to participate in it.
Yeah.
They can get things done when they want to get things done if it concerns them.
Thank you, Leroy. But we're going to squeeze one last call in. Jan in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to remind your callers that next Tuesday there is a primary election that is very critical, in which we're going to be deciding who runs for the state superintendent of education that covers things like homeschool and
right.
voucher programs.
Right, and for the interest of time, Jan, that's just for those in the state of Wisconsin, just Wisconsin listeners. We're out of time. Bill Fitter, our guest here today. And Bill, as always, thank you so much for being involved and helping to inform our listeners.
Thank you, Jim, and thank all the callers for the great insights and questions and comments. It's always an honor to be with you.
Bill Fitter, again, his website, AmericanMinute.com. These books we've talked about, Who is a King in America? I see also America's God and Country and others, The Miracles in American History. You can contact our switchboard, 800-729-9829. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.